To do what I've done over the years with these conferences, I'm going to share primarily some testimony. And within the testimony, I'll weave some teaching. The story began, that I'm going to share, in March last year, March 2007, and I should perhaps give you some sort of introduction, really. I work in both the UK and in Southeast Asia. And we have a place where we live in Singapore. And I've worked with a church in Singapore, an Anglican church, for 25 years. It's a fast-growing church. It's a church that God has blessed amazingly. We have almost 5,000 members. And I come there mostly to take the place of the senior vicar when he's away on leave or travelling or ministering somewhere else. So that's my relationship with the church, and it's been a remarkable relationship over a 25-year period. And we were there in March last year, 2007, in the second of our Sunday morning services, and at the end of the second service, a young man came to me, or a man came to me. He's a doctor. His name is Dr. Leslie Tay, and he said to me, "Would you pray for my son?" His son's name is James. He's 8 years old. He has never walked properly, and he wants God to heal his son. And so I'm happy to do that, because that's part of our commission, to heal the sick. And that didn't include medical school. And so I laid hands on James, and I prayed for him, and God wonderfully, and I wish it was always like that, instantaneously healed him. And he began to jump and run and shout. And he said, "Daddy, Daddy, look, I'm running." And it was the most wonderful time. And God had healed 8-year-old James. And at the end of the service, after we'd prayed for him and God had healed him, his father, Leslie, said to me, "Could he take us for dinner? Because he would like to say thank you." And that's a wonderful way of saying thank you, is have dinner together. And so I said, "Yes, but it's not convenient today and this week and next week. But maybe in May, when I am going to be back in Singapore, because we travel in other parts of Asia, to Indonesia and to China and so on." And so in May, towards the end of May, we had a meal together with Dr. Leslie Tay. And Leslie said to me, he said, "How are you physically?" And I said, "Well, I'm okay." But then I thought, well, that's not totally honest. And I said to him, "Well, apart from the fact that at night time I can't sleep, because I have to go to the bathroom at least 8 or 9 times a night." And he said to me, "Well, that's not good and that's not normal." He said, "Could I examine you?" So I said, "Yes." And he examined me and said, "Things are not normal. There's something seriously wrong." And he said, "I think I need to take a blood sample." So I said, "Well, that's fine." And then he said, that was on the Saturday, he said, "I'll get the results by probably tomorrow night or Monday morning. So I'll be in touch." And on the next day, I was preaching in another church in Singapore, and as I was preaching, my eye caught a verse from the Bible, from 2 Kings chapter 4, and the verse said this, "It will be all right." Just those words. And I was so excited, "It will be all right." And as I was preaching on the woman who had the cruse of oil, and that wonderful story, I kept on, as I'm preaching, looking at this verse further down the page, "It will be all right." And then after the message, after preaching, my wife and I got in the car and we drove to Malacca in Malaysia, across the causeway and into Malaysia, because we had to attend a leader's advance. We don't call them retreats, we call them advances. And 300 of our church leaders from the church, we're going to meet together for this time of advance, 5 days of advancing. Leaders need that on a regular basis, and I need that on a regular basis. And so we drove to Malacca, And we arrived there in the evening, and around about 7:30 at night, I had a phone call from Singapore from Dr. Leslie. He said, I think you need to come back to Singapore because the blood test is not a very good result, and we need to talk and take some action. And I was disappointed because I love the leaders of the church. It's where I live and love, and they're my friends and brothers and sisters. And God has blessed us as a team, as a leadership team. And so I had to leave them, and we went back to Singapore. Got back to Singapore on the Tuesday morning, and in the afternoon went for a biopsy. It was the prostate that was the issue at that moment, and the biopsy in the prostate biopsy, they took it. I want to say that I wouldn't recommend a biopsy of a prostate. It's not pleasant. No anesthetic, no analgesics, just pierce through the wall of the rectum and take 10 samples. Not pleasant. And it was actually quite interesting. I do have a bit of a sense of humour. And the specialist, Dr. Sam Pei, he said to his assistant as he was taking the samples, how many is that? And I said, 8. And Elin didn't know, and I did, because I was counting every one of them, pain by pain. And so the samples were taken. And then Dr. Sam, and I'll tell you more about Sam later, but Dr. Sam said, now you must rest. And I mean rest, he said. No going anywhere. You go back to your home, you rest, you may want to walk around a little bit, but you don't do any more than that. You go nowhere, and you certainly don't go to a church. And that was his word. And so I said, well, doctor, that's not possible, because I'm speaking at a Lutheran church retreat starting on Thursday over the weekend. And this was Tuesday. He said, you're not going to any Lutheran church retreat. I said, but they're expecting me, and I can't let them down. And then I had this horrible realization that my wife could go, but I couldn't. And that Esther would be there, and I wouldn't be. And it was a reversal of roles, something I've not known in 36 years of our married life together. And that's how it had to be. And so Esther went off to the retreat in the north of Malaysia, and I stayed back in Singapore. And Monday came, and I was asked to go on Monday morning to Mount Elizabeth Hospital in Singapore to meet with Dr. Sam Pei. And so I went on my own. Esther was still away at this church retreat, would come back late that evening. And over, we sat down together, Sam and I, and he said, well, the news isn't brilliant. He said every sample was cancerous. It's quite invasive, it's advanced, and he gave me a reading level, if you understand medical things, of 7 on a Gleason scale, which is actually a third stage cancer. And so this is what he shared with me, and I didn't have any problem accepting it at that moment, but then he said to me, now we need to take action very quickly, and we have 2 possible courses of action. One is hormone therapy, followed by radiation therapy, and the other is radical surgery, followed by radiation therapy. Which would you prefer? So I looked at him and I thought, well, you're the doctor, not me, and you know more about these things than I do. So I said to him, you decide. So he said, well, I think in your case, it has to be radical surgery. So I said, okay, we go down that route. So then he said to me, something I need to ask you, do you have any medical insurance? Now, I have been in Christian ministry for 43 years, and I have never, apart from a 3-year period when I was a pastor of a church in Westminster, I have never taken a salary. And I've never asked anybody for money. I've never written an appeal saying we need funds. Because in the beginning of our ministry together, we wrote in our Bible these words: we will trust God to provide everything we need. We will always give as God tells us to. We will seek to never be in debt. And we will never, ever ask anybody at any time for money, on the basis of Matthew 6:33, when you seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, everything else will be added to you. Now, can I say to you that that is our position, but it isn't everybody's position? Because the majority of people would be working and earning an income. But that's the way God led us, and we went to Indonesia as missionaries on that basis and lived in Indonesia in a Muslim community, and that was how we began our ministry. So I'm looking at the doctor and he says, do you have medical insurance? And I don't. Never even thought about it. And so I said, well, I do have travel insurance. And he sort of smiled and said, that's not sufficient. Do you have any other funds? And I'm quickly thinking to myself, and I reckoned at a squeeze, I could probably get around about $1,500 to $1,600. So I said, well, how much will it cost? He said, we're talking in terms of at least $50,000. I said, really? So how would you intend to pay? So I looked at him and I thought, well, what do I do? What do I say? And so this is what I said to him, and he's never forgotten this, and I've never forgotten it either. It kind of just came out. I said, well, I know you may not be of the same belief or persuasion as me, but all through my life as a minister, as a pastor, as a missionary, God has provided. And he's not going to stop providing now. And if you will trust me, doctor, then I will trust you. And that was my challenge to the doctor. And in an amazing way, Dr. Sam said, I don't know why, but I trust you. Let's get started. Let's do a bone scan in 45 minutes' time. And then we'll do a CT scan this afternoon. And on Wednesday morning, we'll do surgery. Now, what he didn't know was that on the Sunday night, I had read and read and read again that passage, It Will Be All Right. And it was about the Shunammite woman who, after her son died, went to Elijah the prophet. And actually, what she was saying is, I must go quickly. It will be all right. And looking back now, it couldn't possibly have been quicker. To have a bone scan 45 minutes after a diagnosis. And then the doctor, in his kindness, said to me, perhaps this afternoon we should give you a rest. We'll do the CT scan tomorrow morning, and then we'll do surgery on Wednesday morning. And so that's how fast it went. So then he said something which I've often thought about. He said, go and have a cup of coffee, relax, and we'll do the bone scan in 45 minutes. And I'm not quite sure if that's the advice one would normally give to somebody who's just been told they've got, you know, a third stage cancer. Go and relax and have a cup of coffee. And I couldn't. So I left the hospital and went across the road to the shopping mall. And I walked around the shopping mall, the shopping centre you call it here. And I must confess to you, I was totally and completely knocked out. I didn't know how to think. I was desperate. I managed to get through to my wife on the phone, and she was by this time in the car traveling down from north of Malaysia. And I was just completely stunned and dazed. And I didn't know what to do. And in desperation, I rang a lady called Constance. And I'll be forever grateful to Constance. Constance is one of our leaders of our intercession team. We have 800 ladies who are intercessors for Singapore. And Constance leads this team of intercessors for Singapore. And I rang Constance and said, "Constance, I've just been told I've got cancer. I am desperate. I don't know what to do. Will you please pray?" And Constance said this. She said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in the Paragon shopping mall." "What shop are you standing by?" I said, "I'm standing outside a shop called Salvatore Ferragamo." She said, "Don't move. Somebody will be with you in 30 seconds. What an amazing statement. And then the phone went dead. And 30 seconds later, a lady came to me and said, "Michael." I said, "Yes." She said, "I came back from London last night." She's a Singaporean. She said, "I don't know why, but I couldn't sleep this morning. So I got up and I just felt I should come down to the shopping mall. And I've been walking around wondering why I'm here." She's a member of our church. Now, here's a little problem you might understand. When you have 5,000 members, you don't always know everybody. And so I didn't quite know her, but she said to me, "I've heard you preach so many times, and I'm just happy to come and be of assistance. What's the problem?" And so I told her what the doctor had just said. And then she said to me, "I'm a doctor, and I'm going to not go to work for the next 5 days. I'll get a locum in immediately, and I'm going to walk with you and be with you over the next 5 days. I'll be your driver. I'll take you around. I'll look after you." And I want to say to you this morning that God doesn't just provide pennies, he provides people. And in many ways, people are far more exciting than pennies. And so Dr. Fiona Tan went with me back to the hospital and stood with me through the bone scan. And then she took me home to rest. And that night, Esther came home, and we spent most of the night not sleeping, and we talked a lot. Do you remember that? And we talked about that word, "Go quickly and it will be all right." That's God's word. That's Rhema word to us. God speaks through his word. And the next morning we went for the CT scan. Dr. Fiona picked us up and took us to the hospital. And the CT scan is just a normal CT scan, a 1 hour or so job, you know. And then after the CT scan, they said to me, "The result will be ready in 1 hour. Please just go and have a cup of coffee and relax and come and get the results in an hour." And so we went for a cup of coffee, Esther and Dr. Fiona and myself. And that's when the first of the miracles of provision took place. Because as we were sitting having coffee in the shopping mall I mentioned just now, unbeknown to me, there was an Englishman sitting on the other side of the coffee shop with his back to me. And his testimony is this, that he felt a hand on his face, gently turning his head around until he saw me. And when he saw me, he recognized me. And he came across and said, "Are you Michael Ross Watson?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You preached in my church in Nottingham, in England, 20 years ago. Do you remember me?" So I said, "No." And he said, "It's so wonderful to see you. How are you?" And I said, "I'm fine, thanks. Except that I've got a physical problem." And with him was a Singaporean man in his mid-50s, Chinese, who'd been having coffee with him. And the two of them had come across together. And when the Chinese man heard that I'm having a problem with sickness, he said to me, "God has told me to help you. What do you need?" And I kind of looked at him and didn't know what to say. And so he said a second time, "God has told me to help you. What do you need?" I said, well, right now, I need prayer. Now, remember the principle of never asking for money. Everything inside of me wanted to say, I need $50,000. But I said, we need prayer. I need prayer. And he sat down, and I looked at him face to face, and I looked into his eyes, and I saw in this man a godliness which was quite astounding to me, something very beautiful. And when I later heard his testimony of how he had been so corrupt and made so many millions of pounds through corruption, working with a corrupt Indonesian government, and how God had saved him in the most amazing way, it's just a remarkable story. God's done something so deeply in this man's life. And he prayed for me, and then he said, I'm here to help you. Anything you need, just let me know. And he said it a fourth time. And then he gave me his card, and he said, who is your doctor? I said, it's Dr. Sam Pei of Mount Elizabeth Hospital, a urologist. He said, well, anything you need, just tell me. God has told me to help you. And then he and the Englishman walked away. And that was the meeting. An hour later, I got the results of the CT scan. Horrible results, I must say, because the cancer had spread from the prostate into the lymph nodes, and that's a dangerous thing. And so we then had to take the CT scan results to Dr. Sam Pei. And as we were walking into the clinic, Dr. Sam's clinic, the Chinese man was walking out that we'd met just now. And he looked at me and said, oh, I didn't expect to see you here so soon. And I said to him, I didn't expect to see you here at all. And then he said to me, there's something I need to tell you. I've been talking to your doctor about you. He said, and he's told me all that's going to happen. And you need to know that it's all paid for. I've just paid the $50,000, so there's nothing for you to pay. Never met the man before. 1 hour earlier I met him. God's amazing way to provide. When we go into recession, God is never in recession. Darling, I would love... And of course, when I spoke to Sam Pei, he said, who on earth is that man? I said, I don't know, I've never met him before. I met him an hour ago. That was quite a story. Darling, would you come? I just want you to share a little bit about other provision, because this is my wife, and she is very, very special. And can I just say to her that during this time, this last 15, 18 months, I've come to love her more than I ever loved her before. And sometimes in the ministry, when you become everybody else's possession, marriage can suffer. And marriage hasn't been easy between 2003 and 2007 as a result of ministry. And God has just brought us so much closer together. Esther.
When we first committed our lives to in obedience to the Lord Jesus, we agreed that we would do whatever he asked us to do, go where he would ask us to go. And the verse that so often came to me was that verse that said, if you give up houses and lands, parents, children, for my name's sake, I will restore 100-fold. And I never forgot that verse, but as the years went through third world country and the difficulties came, I just sometimes begin to wonder where all this fitted in. And so based on those years and that promise, we went into this experience, and in my heart I was full of confidence that God would be there for us. And Even though people were asking, why has this happened to you? Why have you had to go through this? And some people said, all the years you've given to God, all the time you've worked for him, and you have to go through this. And at that time, I could say was, but God loves us so much. And he proved that. And through this, an amazing, because a lot of people back in England, you know, they were wanting to know why we hadn't come back and got this done on the national health. They had no idea of what God had pre-planned for us, because we hadn't. And we were confused, and we thought, how is this going to be done speedily? And then when this happened, of course, we knew that this was God's plan. But apart from that, we're living in a country. Singapore's a very rich country in many ways, lots of materialism, very expensive to rent a place. But at this time came an offer of a place to stay. It was a four-bedroomed apartment, which gave us room to bring the kids over if they needed to come from England, give us room for missionaries or people passing through Singapore. It was just such an amazing provision. That block of flats was due to be pulled down and a new block raised on the ground where that had been. But we just dropped in for those 3 months, just exactly so timed, when it could hardly be rented out for 3 months at a time. But the lady who owned it said, I'd like to bless you, and you can stay in that place.
It was longer than that. It was 7 months altogether.
7 months altogether. And so I was so grateful for that, because we had two children at that time. We had four children, two in Indonesia, but they're on their own steam. They're married and they're looking after themselves. And we had two at home, and my son was a chef, and he wanted to give up his job and come out to dad. And he did just that. And here we had the perfect place for him to stay. My daughter was working at King's College in London, and one night at 7 o'clock, she just surprised us by knocking at the apartment door and saying, here I am, and threw her way in and flung her arms around us, and we were never more excited than to see her at that time than even ever before, in a sense. And so that was a wonderful provision. So it wasn't just the doctor that came alongside Michael when even I wasn't there with him, but God provided somebody else. He provided an apartment for us, and he provided a vehicle. Somebody came round and with the keys, and I handed us the keys and said, you can use this car. And how amazing that was for getting to and fro from the hospital. And all these things just show us what a great, big, wonderful God we have. He's just so amazing. He never lets us down. And since then, the lady who provided the apartment we lived in, we had to give that up because of the stage of the apartment. But then later, another lady had advertised on the church board that she had an apartment room, an ensuite bathroom. She desperately wanted to offer it for the use of a pastor or a missionary who was constantly coming to and fro in Southeast Asia. But we hadn't seen that, and we'd already had this other apartment. And then one day she came to us at the end of a meeting when we were praying for people, and she said, I don't understand why nobody answered this thing I put on the board. Nobody wants it. And I said, come on, I'll go around and see it, because I knew that the time was coming to an end where we were. And we went round, and sure enough, there was a beautiful place in the wealthiest part of Singapore, right behind Orchard Road, if you know it, and allowed us to stay in her block. And wonder of wonders, she's just had that whole block renovated, and she's now putting us in September when we go into a brand new, or almost brand new, apartment with swimming pool and with jacuzzis and with gym that we need so badly. And God is so good; He never lets us down. So my bit of the story, by the way, too. People sometimes think, "Oh, I just sit on the side and pray." But we're very much involved together. And I went through a lot of what he went through at the time in a different kind of way.
Darling, thank you so much. I really wanted you to be part of that. Thank you.
Well, can I just say that I've got a new Bible, just to change the subject slightly, and I'd like to tell you about my son, our son Tim. Tim is a difficult boy. He is very different. He's very, very creative. He's a highly qualified chef. He trained with Gordon Ramsay. He doesn't like church at all, but he thinks Jesus is cool, but church is not. And his pet phrase is, "Dad, I love Jesus, don't like church." And I've found thousands of people like him who struggle with church, but who actually love Jesus. On the 16th of January 2006, Tim rang me. He was working in the Gordon Ramsay restaurant in Hospital Road, Chelsea. He had been working 18 hours a day, normally starting at 7 in the morning and finishing at somewhere around about 1 in the next morning. Ramsay only allowed him a 15-minute break during that 18-hour day, and his salary was £3.10 an hour. Don't ask me how that happens in the United Kingdom when you have a minimum wage, but there are many, many ways around things like that, and it's actually a kind of slave labor. And Tim finally collapsed, and he rang me on that day, 16th of January 2007, and said to me, "Dad, I can't take any more. I can't go on. I want to give my life to Jesus. Will you disciple me?" There are not many fathers who have the privilege of a 22-year-old son asking them to disciple them. And so I gave up all ministry for the next 3 months. I just cancelled everything, and every morning I drove into London to be there at 6 o'clock, so that I could spend the first 45 minutes of Tim's day with him. And we talked, and we prayed, and we read the Bible together, and God began to touch and change him. Then, recently, he gave me, on Father's Day, my new Bible. And it says this, "To Dad, it seems funny me giving you a Bible and writing in it. Funny how God turned things around. Don't really know what to say, but want to say thank you for always being there, praying for me and encouraging me. I love you lots. P.S. I know you know it, but it's one of my favorite verses, Mark 11, 22 to 24. You know, what blessed me was that Tim then went back into another chefing job and a very, very high-class restaurant at a golf course in north of London, and where people like Tiger Woods come, and Nick Faldo has his training school. And when Tim heard that I was sick, he gave it all up and he came to live with me in Singapore. And I just want to say that God is good. And today Tim is still in Singapore, and we're not. But Tim is now the head fashion designer of a fashion house in Singapore, and God has blessed him amazingly. And one of the things that came out of all this was that Tim is now in the place he's in. So on the Wednesday after the CT scan surgery, and I'm going to be totally honest with you now and say that it hasn't been easy. If I said it was, I'd be lying. I struggle a lot. Ladies might understand this if I say that ladies have a menopause. I've had an andropause. What happens is the surgeons have cut off all the testosterone and hormones in the lower half of my body because that was feeding the cancer.
and I put weight on. And that worries me so much. They said it would happen that way, but I've struggled with that. And I struggled with these horrible hot flushes and constantly, in most unexpected moments, just beginning to perspire almost profusely. And I can't control it. And they've had to destroy, through radiotherapy, all the lymph nodes in the abdomen area. And that's what brings the water drainage from the ankles and legs back up and through the system. And it's not been easy. I want to be honest about that. Surgery was basically to cut off the hormones in the lower half of the body. And then the doctor said, go back to England and have 2 or 3 weeks rest, and then we're going to start radiotherapy. So we came back to the UK and flew back to Singapore, and then the radiotherapy started in August, early August. It was 37 days consecutively. I want to say, and this is not in any way meant to be critical of National Health Service, please don't misunderstand me, but I have a very close friend who is high up in the NHS, an administrator of the NHS, and he said to me the equipment they're using in Singapore is so modern, it's so up to date, we can't afford to buy it in England, in the NHS. He said there's only one of those machines in the UK, and that's in Harley Street in private practice. This amazing new equipment called tomotherapy, which is a new form of radiotherapy, very, very pinpoint accurate. Most of the machines used in UK are much more generalized, and they will generally radiate an area. This will pinpoint accurately where the radiation should go. And every day you go into the machine and you are measured up because parts of your body move around, so it will exactly hit the right place on each day. There's not much good I can say about radiotherapy, except there are some bonuses. And one of them is that I had 7 beautiful young radiographers. And they were just the sweetest, loveliest ladies, and any man would have been thrilled to be looked after by those 7 beautiful ladies. And on the first morning, in the Toma machine, as I'm laying on the machine and they're preparing it, I have June on one side of me, and she is Singaporean, she's Chinese, and she's a Buddhist. And I have Mary on the other side of me, she is Filipino. And June asks me a question. She says, if you are a pastor, and if you are a spiritual man, why are you going through this? Now, that's a question I'm supposed to answer this morning in this seminar. I was kind of taken aback that a radiographer would ask me a question like that. But then Mary, on the other side of the machine, Mary here and June here and me laying in the middle, Mary looks at June and says, didn't you know, June, that problems are a gift from God? And then June and Mary begin to talk about this, and I'm in the middle, and it's like being at Wimbledon. You know? And I'm listening to Mary answering June's questions. Anyway, the bottom line is that at the end of their conversation, I said to June, June, I don't know why I'm going through this either, but I will tell you in 3 days' time. I'm going to ask the Lord to show me, and in 3 days' time, I'll give you an answer. And so I spent the next 3 days between radiotherapy, and by the way, the apartment Esther mentioned was 4 minutes' drive from the hospital, right in the center of Singapore. That was amazing. But I spent a lot of time thinking about why I'm going through this. And then I began to think back, and a few months earlier, I had been reading the book of Job. And actually, God had really given me a word from Job, and I'd been preaching on it. But I don't think Job is the answer to my problem, but it was a preparation. As I prayed, I felt God gave me 5 words. And I'd like to share those with you this morning. This is the teaching part of the seminar. Five reasons why God allows problems to come into a person's life. Recently, I shared this in a meeting, and I got told off by a theologian for saying God doesn't allow anything. But I still think he does. I think God permitted Satan to attack Job. Okay? I think God allowed him to. And this theologian was arguing the sovereignty of God. But actually, I do think God allows things to happen in our lives. And this is what the Lord showed me. First of all, he uses problems. And can I say, before I say any more, that sickness does not have its roots in God. God is not the author of sickness. Please let me state that categorically and clearly. He may allow things to happen, but he's not the author of it. Job teaches us that. Number one, God uses problems to direct us. Have you noticed how sometimes it almost seems like God has to light a fire under us to get us moving? And sometimes he has to allow things to happen to get our attention even. Can I say that we have been involved in ministry over the last years and tremendous opportunities in China. I maybe talk about China on Friday evening. What goes on behind the games? In Indonesia, which is such a troubled country. In Malaysia. And of course in our beloved Singapore. But can I say that when you're ministering and you're doing something, and I guess it could be the same in what we call secular work, but I don't want to use that term because secular work is full-time Christian ministry. But can I say that sometimes you're doing it, and you just do it. And somehow you aren't in tune with God in the way you should be because you're just doing it. Does that make sense? And he has to somehow get our attention. And I think God allows problems because he wants to get our attention and direct us. There's a verse in Proverbs, it's unusual. You've got to read the Good News Bible to get this meaning. But in Proverbs 20 and verse 30, in the Good News Bible, it says this: sometimes it takes a painful situation to make us change our ways. So God uses problems to direct us. Secondly, God uses problems to inspect us. Have you noticed that people are somewhat like tea bags? When you put them in hot water, you find out what they're really like. And although temptation does not come from God, and James makes that very clear in James 1, tests do come from God. God tested Abraham. Genesis 22, verse 1. And God tests our faith. And he uses problems and difficulties that we face to test us. Listen to what James says. When you have many kinds of troubles, it doesn't say if, it says when, you should be full of joy because you know that these troubles test your faith. And this will give you patience. That's James chapter 1, verses 2 to 3. So God uses problems to direct us and to inspect us. Thirdly, God uses problems to
correct us. To direct us, inspect us, correct us. Have you noticed how some lessons we only learn through pain and failure? I guess when Tim was a boy, he was very naughty sometimes, and one day Mummy said to him, don't touch the stove, Tim, it's hot. And he touched the stove, and he burned himself. But he never touched it again. He learned through pain. I think sometimes we learn the value of something most when we lose it. Health, wealth, relationships. I don't know whether you're aware of this, but there's a man in the conference, and I couldn't do anything but go to him because he was sobbing this morning. Lovely man. 3 weeks ago, his wife passed away when they were on holiday in Kenya. And we were singing this morning, "The Lord gives and the Lord takes away." He does. Listen to what David said in Psalm 119, verses 71 and 72 from the Living Bible. "It was the best thing that could have happened to me because it taught me to pay attention to your laws." Directing us, inspecting us, correcting us. Fourthly, and this may sound strange, God uses problems to protect us. It can actually be a blessing in disguise, especially if it prevents us from being harmed by something even more serious. I have an example of this. A friend of mine in Singapore, Winston, named after Winston Churchill, he's Chinese. Winston is working in the financial sector, and last year he lost his job. And it was very painful for him to be unemployed and to go through the ignominy of losing his job. And Winston came to me complaining about it. What had happened was his boss had asked him to do something that was, for him as a Christian, unethical. And he couldn't do it as a Christian. Winston came to me earlier this year and said he's so grateful now, because although he lost his job and it was so painful, he isn't standing in the dock with his boss, who has just been sentenced to several years in prison for fraud. God had been protecting him, but he couldn't see it at the time. And fifthly, I have discovered that God uses these things to perfect us, to direct us, inspect us, correct us, protect us, and perfect us. When problems come, like it or not, the way we respond to them will potentially be a character builder. Listen to what Paul said. We can rejoice when we run into problems because they help us learn to be patient. And patience develops strength of character in us and helps us trust God more each time we use it, until finally our hope and faith are strong and steady. That is Romans 5, 3 and 4 in the Living Bible. Here's the point of it all. God is at work in your life, even when you don't recognize it or understand it. And so I went back to the hospital and I said to June, this is the reason I'm going through a problem. It's either to direct me, inspect me, correct me, protect me, or perfect me. And it may be a bit of several of them. And then June said to me, I have a naughty boy who won't do what he's told. Will you pray for him? This is a Buddhist. So I said, yes, let's pray now. And so we prayed for her little boy. And the next day she came back, and she works there. And I was on the machine, and she said, last night the most amazing thing happened. My little boy didn't argue when he was told to go to bed. And he didn't say, I want to keep playing computer games. He just went to bed. He never does that. So I said, June, we prayed for him yesterday. And she said, it's amazing. And then she said something that I could hardly believe what I was hearing from a Buddhist. She said, my favorite singer is a Christian worship leader called Don Moen. I said, really? She said, I love his songs. I said, wow. And so after treatment that day, I went to the Christian bookshop and bought all the CDs of Don Moen. Wonderful CDs. And I brought them to her, beautifully wrapped in a parcel next day with a ribbon on top. And I said, June, this is for you. It's every one of Don Moen's CDs, personally as a gift from Esther and I. And 2 days later, she said, would you pray for me? I want to receive Jesus. God is so good. And so we went through the radiotherapy, 37 days of it. And then it was, the last day was the 17th of September. That was Happy Monday. That was Hallelujah Monday. Finished the treatment. And Angela was with us, Esther was with me, Timothy was with me. We were all together and we just had the most wonderful time. The treatment is finished. I mean, it was a battle. I've had that catheter in for 7 months. It was a battle. You know, I've got pain, but the treatment's finished. And that was Monday, the 17th of September. Friday, the 21st of September was Black Friday. There was a phone call at 7:45 in the morning. It was from the oncologist. And he said to me, Michael, I'm so sorry. It's totally inexcusable. It is completely unforgivable. I'm just so sorry. You must come and see me this morning. I said, Doctor, I can't just be told that and then not know. What's going on? He said, I'm so sorry. We've made a mistake with the radiotherapy. We haven't radiated the part that most needed it. We forgot. He said, we radiated the prostate, but we forgot the lymph nodes. And it's from there, of course, that the cancer spreads to the bones. Esther was just laying in bed. It was 7:45 in the morning. And I told Esther, and she said, they can't make a mistake like this. This is Singapore. This is the most advanced medical nation possibly on earth apart from the United States. They can't make a mistake like this. And then Tim came in and said, we'll sue them. And I want to tell you that suing somebody is not comfort in a situation like that. And then Angela comes in and she just cries. And it was a black day. And so I went to see the oncologist and he said, we have no choice. We have to redo the treatment, the radiotherapy, and we have to double the dose. And so we started all over again 4 days later, 5 days later. I struggled, I confess to you. If I didn't say I didn't struggle, I wouldn't be telling the truth. But after about 3 days, I had this idea. And I went out and I bought some gold writing paper, because I like gold as a color. And I wrote a letter to the oncologist. And I'd like to read, or I'd like to tell you what I wrote. Dear doctor, I won't tell you his name for obvious reasons. Dear doctor, I want to begin by saying to you that I admire
your medical expertise. You have been a professor of oncology for 25 years and a doctor for over 40 years. Many of the leading oncologists in Singapore have come under you for training, and you've had an amazing life as a doctor. I admire you and I respect you. Secondly, I want to say to you that I am a man who is very fallible and I make lots of mistakes. And how can a man who makes mistakes point at another man who makes mistakes and condemn him? Thirdly, I want to say to you that you are totally and utterly and completely forgiven. There will never be any litigation. There will never be any comeback, which is negative. You are completely released from the mistake you made. And fourthly, next week you're going on holiday. Please go with a completely clear conscience and have a wonderful holiday and enjoy it with your wife. Yours sincerely, Michael Ross Watson. 3 days later, he rang me and he said, "Would you come to my office?" And when I got to his office, there he was sitting behind his desk, his very executive kind of office with desk and an executive seat, you know, the big leather ones. And he said to me, with the letter in his hand, "I have never received a letter like this in 40 years of medical practice." He said, "I was terrified." And then he began to cry. And he said, "My wife, Daisy, has secondary cancer of the liver and lungs. And 7 years ago, I had to go through litigation. And I was found not guilty in the court. But I couldn't have gone through it again." And he said, "Westerners who come to Singapore for medical treatment, if anything goes wrong, the slightest thing, the first thing they look for is compensation." He said, "I couldn't have faced it." He just broke down and sobbed. And I had the joy of going round from the other side of the desk and sitting on the arm of his chair and just putting my arm around him and hugging him, and we cried together. I had a dream. In my dream, I saw a meal. I must be Singaporean if I dream about food. I saw a meal, and I saw people gathered for a meal. And I felt the Lord was speaking to me and saying to me, "Arrange a meal for people you want to bless." And so we booked the best restaurant in Singapore at Singapore Island Country Club. And we booked 55 places for a meal. And we invited Dr. Sam Pei and his lovely wife, Ivy. Sam has poured his heart out to me since. He's more than a doctor. He's a very, very close and precious friend. He doesn't want anything to do with Christianity. His father was an elder of a Presbyterian church. And he said, "I've seen so much politics in the church and even in the medical practice. I just want to keep clear of it all." And he's poured his heart out to me. And he said to me, like Tim says, "I have no problem with Jesus, I have a problem with church." Sitting on our right hand, on the top table at that meal, was the oncologist who made the mistake. with his wife Daisy. There were radiographers, nurses, one or two prayer partners. Constance was there. Dr. Fiona was there. Leslie Tay was there. God is good. I'm going to close because it's 20 to 1. I don't want to leave you too long. But I want to close by telling you a little story that you may or may not have heard of, but it was something that brought me to tears and a place of something I can't hardly describe to you. It happened in South Africa. It happened in a courtroom, and there was a black African lady. She was 70 years old and quite frail. And she'd been listening to the trial of a man called Van der Broek, who was a police officer who had come to her home and who had taken away her son, shot him at point-blank range, and then parted with his fellow officers while the boy's body was being burned. Then, sometime later, he came back for her husband and took the husband away. And for two years, she never had any news of where he was. And then one day, Van der Broek came back to take her. And he brought her to a place by a river where she saw her husband alive, bound, and beaten, laying on a pile of wood. And in front of her eyes, they poured petrol over him, and they lit the wood. And the last words he spoke were, "Father, forgive them." And here she is now, in the courtroom, at the trial of Van der Broek. And the judge turned to her and said, "He has been found guilty of his crimes. What do you want to happen to him, to this man who has so brutally destroyed your family?" And the lady said, "There are three things I want. First of all, I would like to go to the place where my husband died. And I'd like to pick up the dust. I'd like to give him a proper burial. Secondly, I would like Mr. Van der Broek to become my son. I'd like him to come to the ghetto twice a month and be with me so I can pour out on him any love that I have still remaining in me. And thirdly, my husband and son were my only family, and I know that my husband would want this. I'd like someone to take me across the courtroom to Mr. Van der Broek so I can embrace him and tell him he is totally forgiven." This was reported in the national press in South Africa. And as they led her across the courtroom, Mr. Van der Broek fainted. He couldn't take it. But many people who had been victims of decades of oppression in South Africa, neighbors, friends, began to sing quietly, "Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see." God calls us to forgive. January the 9th this year, the doctors told me that the cancer is in remission. I don't believe that. I believe that I'm healed. But all the tests are good so far. Where's it left me? It's left me loving my wife more than I have for years. It's left me with a whole new sense of priorities. It's left me with a sense of God like I've not known for years, and his presence. It's put ministry off the altar and put God on the altar. Not on the altar, but me on the altar in front of him. I don't preach often like I used to these days. I still do preach, but not so often. But there's a whole new anointing, a whole new sense of God, a whole new sense of his power and his authority. It's a journey I wouldn't wanted to have gone on. But looking back, it's a journey I wouldn't want to have missed. And I don't know what the next years are going to be like. But I know that God has promised that he will be with me and he will use me. And I have this tremendous sense that I've not known really quite like this for years, that I can't do anything very much. And I'm utterly dependent upon him. And that's what I have to share this morning. I hope it's helpful. God uses problems to direct us, to inspect us, to correct us, to protect us sometimes. You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. And to perfect us. I'm not quite sure what we do next. What do we do now? No. Don't leave that. Let anybody want to ask a question? If there is a question, I don't know whether there would be really, but if there is a question, then we can have it. It's not kind of like a teaching seminar, is it? But I just got to be what I am. I can't do what I'm not, you know. So. Anybody want to ask anything at all? Yes, sir. Let's just use the microphone so that we can hear together. Thank you.
Kind of molehill and mountain stuff, but my 12-year-old son, as we were coming up to this conference, lost a front tooth in a sailing accident. Which, you know, just got his adult teeth, and they're beautiful. And then first morning here, which was Friday morning, he broke his arm, and we spent a day in hospital.
Oh.
So, and yet he's got a broadest smile on his face now. He's bounced back. We've had, in that hospital, I not only found out from one of the emergency phone numbers that the Roselle campsite is run by the cousin of one of the people on the intercessory team here, but also there was a woman and her daughter who were on fire from the aisles. So we were surrounded by friends immediately on that trip into the hospital. So what you said just resonates with me. And, you know, intercession in the background. And, you know, we don't have a bill to pay, praise the Lord. But in terms of support and how he's bounced back, just lift him up, that the fracture in his radius going out to his left thumb heals properly, if you would. That's our one remaining worry. But what you've said just resonates. I've got nothing to ask, but just to say that what you've said has spoken to me directly. And
bless you.
This business of Job, you know, we can't say why these things are happening, but there will be wonderful things. Now, we do have a bit of a prayer life in our family. It's a bit shaky, but I was able to pray with the younger two children whilst we were playing crazy golf the other day, and when we heard some news about him. So What you're saying, your words, like the Lord's words, have life about them, and they have touched me directly, and I'm sure they'll be touching other people.
Bless you.
Thank you. Many thanks.
Thank you. Can I just say that my son Tim is now walking with the Lord. He's attending church in Singapore. He's totally different. His wisdom that he gets from the Lord is just amazing us. And there may be somebody here this morning whose child is away from the Lord or struggling. Can I lovingly say to you, don't give up. Don't give up. I come from a home which is Masonic. My stepfather was a leading British Freemason. My mother was a Spiritist medium. And I got saved. And when I was 7 years old, a man came to the house. He was a member of a church called the Brethren. And he knocked on the door and he invited my family to church. And my stepfather and mother rejected him. But he saw me. And I didn't know a thing about this. And 19 years later, when we were at our farewell service, leaving as missionaries to go to Indonesia, that same man was in the meeting. And after the meeting, he came to me and he was crying. And he said, "Are you really Michael Ross Watson?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said to me, "Do you come from near Upminster in Essex?" I said, "Yes, I do." And then he said, "God has answered my prayer." And he began to weep, and he hugged me, and I felt so embarrassed, because in 1970, men didn't hug men unless they were Russians, and real men don't cry. And I sat him down, and I said, "What are you trying to say?" And he opened the flyleaf of his Bible, and there was my name and the 7th of April, 1953. And he said, "I have prayed for you every day for 19 years. And today I've seen that God's answered my prayer." But I just want to say to you, God is good. He does answer prayer. And don't give up on praying for children or family members who are far from him. And my mama, whom I love so much, she's 90 years old now, and she's absolutely on fire for Jesus. She was converted in her 60s, and she's become, apart from my own close family, she's become my best friend. God can do it. Esther, you want to say something, darling? Why don't you come and do that? Because I think that's just you.
I just thought it would be good to commit ourselves to the Lord before we leave. We've all got different kinds of needs that are all probably as serious as each other. And the one we just heard.